Welcome to the Banking with Life podcast. I'm your host, James Nethery, and I'm excited to share with you that we've created a new series. This is a topical series where we've taken previously recorded clips, compiled them by topic, idea, and particular concepts within the infinite banking footprint and the financial world broadly. Topics will include loans, loan repayments, paid up additions riders, other riders, dividends, long-term thinking, what could go wrong, what does go wrong within the infinite banking footprint. And I hope you enjoy listening. And it was created for your edification. Thank you. Well, what is a life insurance company doing with my premium? What are they doing with that money? And so I want to kind of talk about that, right? Number one, when you pay a premium to the life insurance company, it is not your money, right? It becomes their money. It's their capital. Now, you bought a contract. A life insurance policy is a contract, or an annuity is a contract, and it's full of guarantees, promises to pay, right? That's what you've bought. And you have certain rights within that contract. You have a loan provision, a surrender, you know, a withdrawal, you know, you have non-forfeiture. You've got a lot of rights within that contract. Excuse me, but it's not your money. The money belongs to the life insurance company. And let me tell you, I'm going to say it over and over because it's important. Financials matter. The philosophy of a life insurance company matters. You know, dividends matter. What they do with their portfolio and how transparent they are, their portfolio, it matters because we're talking about your money that you put in and bought that guarantee. And that guarantee is made by the life insurance company that's issuing the policy. So what they do absolutely matters. I'm just saying it's not your money, it's theirs. So what do, James? They have to put that money to work to meet future obligations. There's a 100% chance that you're going to graduate. I'm going to graduate. We're all going to graduate. When? We don't know. All right. And then if you have cash value, and you do with a dividend paying life insurance policy issued by a mutual company, it accumulates cash value. There's a guaranteed component of that cash value. It's going to rise. The cash value of that base whole life insurance policy is going to grow to the face amount at age 120. It's a guaranteed increase. Every day the cash value goes up. Then there's a non-guaranteed component, right? If I buy a policy with a mutual company, mutuality is very important here. Okay. It just means that I, the policyholder, am an owner of the company, right? And it matters who owns the company, right? And that structure, mutual versus stock company. We're not going to dive into that deeply today, but we're going to talk about mutuality. Then I get to experience the financial, I get to share in the financial experience of the life insurance company. So if they were financially successful, profitable last year, then they pay a dividend, or in a given year, they pay a dividend at the end of the year. The dividend is not guaranteed, but I have certain rights because I'm the contract owner to tell that company what to do with the dividend. I can take the dividend in cash. I can take the dividend to reduce the premium. I can take the dividend and tell them to reduce a loan. I can tell them to keep the dividend and let it earn interest, or I can have the dividend be paid into the paid up additions rider. And I know that if you practice the infinite banking concept, you know exactly what I'm talking about. That dividend paid into the PUA, paid up additions rider, it's a non-guaranteed component. But when it's paid into the PUA, that is the other component with the guaranteed increase in cash value that's growing every day to meet the future death benefit face amount at age 120, plus the non-guaranteed dividend. The combination of those create an increasing cash value. And that's how we can calculate an internal rate of return. As a side note, just because a company pays a 5% dividend doesn't mean you're earning 5% interest. All right, there's more on that in this channel. So my point here is that the capital accumulates, you know, on a guaranteed and a non-guaranteed basis, and it is important on what the company does with the money that you paid in premium. They put that money to work to meet future obligations. The death, and I can get mad, and here's my point there, I can get mad and leave with a cash value. That's an obligation to the company. Okay. And this also speaks to the very importance of I've already said the philosophy and the financial practices and the investment, you know, portfolio of the life insurance company. But the philosophy is very important. And I'll come back to that. I wanted to consider an overview. You know, if I back up and look at three timelines that we should all consider and think about. Number one is the history or the timeline of banking panics, panics and depressions and recessions, right? So prior to 1929, you know, depressions were called panics, okay? So there's three kind of timelines that you should think about maybe and consider if you wish to. Number one is the history of economic panics, depressions, right? Recessions. And number two is the history of bank crises. You know, so there's been about, like I said earlier, about 48 economic events, and there's been 11 to 12 banking crises. And then there's the third timeline is really kind of a large overview, 30,000 foot overview of the historical events that the companies that exist today, the mutual life insurance companies that are alive and in business today in 2023, have endured since their existence. Okay. And I've given this before, but maybe not as complete. But, and I'm not saying that this is, this is totally complete. You know, I'm sure I've overlooked something and left things out. But let's just consider them for a minute. Because, look, most of these life insurance companies that are mutual life insurance companies that are in existence today, they've been in existence, you know, going as far back as 1847. Right. And then there's 1851, 1860, 1886, 1887, 1888, 1905, you know, these companies are very old and these are the things that they've endured. The panic of 1890, the panic of 1893, the panic of 1902, 1907, and 1910. Then we have an economic depression briefly in 1913. And then we have the Federal Reserve created in 1913. Central cartelized banking. So the central bank of the United States is the Federal Reserve. It's not federal. There are no reserves, and it's more of a cartel than a system, my opinion. Okay, but that was created in 1913. Wonder why? Well, they had to create a central bank because you can't have a world war without a central bank. So then we have World War I, started within months of 1913. All right, 1914 is when it started. Right, you all, and I'm not even trying to give a history lesson. I want you to think and consider all of these events that the companies that practice or you can practice the infinite banking concept with have endured, okay? Excuse me. Then we have the Spanish Influenza, 1918. Yeah, started in Fort Riley, Kansas. 1920, the crash of 1920. Oh, James, I never heard of that one. Yes, of course you haven't because there was no federal intervention. So it recovered very quickly and very robustly because the recovery of 1920 created the boom, the roaring 20s, right? And then we go into the crash, the depression of 1929. And then we have a banking crisis in 1930, 1931, 1933, and then a localized crisis in 1932 in Chicago. It's Panic Inside the Loop. It's a good book. Then we have 1937, you know, economic hiccup there. And then we have World War II, the dividend-paying life insurance company that you can engage with and practice becoming your own banker, the infinite banking concept, have endured all of these things. Bretton Woods Agreement, the Korean conflict, economic recession of 1960, 1969, Nixon closing the gold window at the Federal Reserve in 1971, completely severing all ties to the gold system. 1973, 1980, the savings and loans debacle, you know, savings and loans don't even exist anymore. You should look up the Keating 7 and the savings and loan. And then that morphed into the Resolution Trust Corporation of 1989. It's okay to look at that. Another real estate crisis caused by all the shenanigans and the savings and loan debacle. All of this real estate repriced, sold off at great discounts to the insiders or private buyers. This is nothing new. This Babylonian banking system that we have goes all the way back actually to the garden, okay? Just pointing out that this is nothing new. Then you have the 1990, 2001. You have the Black Monday, Black Friday of the 80s and 90s. You have 2001, that recession. And you have 2007. Then we have the so-called pandemic of 2020. And none of that list doesn't even include all of the unnamed wars and conflicts that the empire has engaged in. All through these events, these mutual life insurance companies have paid a dividend, the non-guaranteed dividend on the right side of the ledger. They keep paying the dividend. You know, when it comes to a dividend, let's consider the insurance company. You know, there are only two types of insurance companies in the world, stock companies and mutual companies, right? Economics 101 says the profit of every company goes to the owner, rightly so. They put up the capital, they design the product, the distribution, take the risk, etc. So if I own a policy with a stock company, you know, I get interest. Some stock companies pay dividends, not very many. But a mutual company, so stock companies are owned by the shareholders, right? So when the stock company makes a profit, the shareholders, the ownership position of that company, receives a benefit. Their share value goes up, right? Or they pay dividends, or both, right?
Yeah.
Because they're the owner. So a mutual company is owned by policyholders. And when a mutual company is profitable, the company has a profitable experience. They share that experience with the owners, the policyholders. And it's paid to them or shared with them in the form of a dividend. Mm-hmm. And the owner has several options. What he can do whatever he wants with that dividend, right? There's basically five. He can take it out in interest, right, or as a dividend payment. He can leave it on deposit with the insurance company and earn interest. He can reduce his premiums with the dividend, or he can take that dividend and plow it right back into the policy, into the paid up additions, where it goes straight to cash, earns more interest and dividends, and buys a little bit more death benefit at mm-hmm. cost. Okay. So the dividend is really the profitable experience of an insurance company. And when it's a mutual company, that dividend is paid to the owner. Now, under the Internal Revenue Code, the dividend in the life insurance industry is classified as a return of premium. You know, Ralph Nader made a big deal about that in the 80s. Oh, the company's overcharging you premium, so they're going to refund you an overpayment of premium, and that's why it's not taxed.
As if that's a bad thing.
I don't care how you classify it. It was paid to me, and I don't owe taxes on it, and it's internal, if I wish it to be, where it just, like that airplane, makes that policy more and more efficient. Mm-hmm. Now, think about this. If I own a stock and I get paid a dividend, let's say I have a direct reinvestment program, right? Okay. I get paid a stock, and now I'm going to buy a fractional share, right? And now the dividend's paid to me, right? It went straight into my little portfolio and bought a fractional share of whatever issue I own. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, what's the share price going to be of that stock next week, next month, next year, whenever you retire? I don't know. You don't know either. My point is, even though I received the dividend, right, it bought a fractional share, and that share value is going to go up and down and can go right past zero. It can't happen in a life insurance policy. Uh-huh. Pretty important. Right, so I don't care how the IRS wants to classify it, as long as I don't have to pay taxes on it and it's legitimate, and it is, I love it and embrace it and would like another, please.
Yeah.
Right. And I want to reference Nelson Nash, Becoming Your Own Banker, 5th edition. right? And I know if you're going to practice the infinite banking concept, you'd want to be aware of this book. And if you're an agent, you surely would want to be aware of it. And if you're an agent, I'm sure you can read. So you should make an effort and take the time to read it. And, you know, this book was published in 2000. The fifth edition was printed in 2008. So we're not talking about something ancient or in the Dead Sea Scrolls, you know, history. No. This is very, very relevant today. And it's extremely relevant, his work, Nelson's work, if you're going to practice the infinite banking concept. And if you don't have time to read or you know, learn to whatever extent you wish to, you know, God bless you. Okay. Page 23, Becoming Your Own Banker. Nelson speaks about dividends, right? And he says, quote unquote, "There are variations in interest earnings, death claims, and expenses of operation, and these factors affect the dividend scale declared for the coming year. You can safely say that real results will never exactly match the illustration provided at the beginning of the life policy, at the beginning of the life of the policy. But once a dividend is declared, its value is guaranteed from that point on. It can never lose value in the future, as can the value of securities," which is kind of what I spoke to earlier, right? If I take the dividend from an equities, you know, position and I buy fractional shares of the equity, there's no guarantee of the future value of that equity. Nelson addresses this simply, layman's terms, very clear. He almost quotes the general formula that I just gave that came from the life insurance industry. You go to every mutual life insurance company on the planet in North America, okay? And they will share with you, it's public information, the general formula of a dividend. Nelson quotes it right here, right? And then talks about, yep, the dividend's not guaranteed, but once it's declared and paid, it's done. Even when it's declared, it's guaranteed, right? If they declare a dividend and you don't receive the dividend, it's because your policy was not in force at the end of the year when dividends are actually paid. All right, so he's exactly right. And that's exactly when the dividend is paid, is at the end of the policy year. Dividend rates are declared by the insurance companies that disclose, that publish their dividend rates, generally at the beginning of a calendar year or at the end of the preceding year. You know, they get into the fourth quarter of a year, calendar year, and the companies start declaring rates, and then other companies are going to wait to declare their rates based on what the other companies declare. I mean, there's a lot of games in the life insurance business. I'm sure you didn't expect any of that, right? Never a game in the life insurance business. Okay, but that is what it is. Excuse me. So they declare the dividend. It's guaranteed that dividend rate, whatever was declared, is going to be paid, but it's going to be paid at the end of the policy value or at the end of the policy year. So if your anniversary is in February, they declared a rate. In January, you get that declared rate in February on your anniversary, and so on. Okay. So how, pray tell, do you receive a dividend? We know where it comes from. The life insurance company pays it, and it's based on their formulary, and it's the policyholder's share of the financial experience of the life insurance company. And I have choices. The policyholder has choices of what to do with that dividend, right? And there's basically four that all the life insurance companies have. Some have five and some have six. This is general. The most common is I can have the dividend paid into the paid up additions rider. Pay the dividend, don't pay me, pay it right into the paid up additions rider. I can say, nope, I want it paid in cash. So at the end of the year, when you pay the dividend, just send me that dividend in the form of a check, right? And then I could say, well, I don't want the dividend in cash. I don't want it paid to the PUA, but I'm tired of paying these great big old life insurance premiums. So can you just apply the dividend to reduce the premium? Nelson did that 15 years, the first 15 years of his 1959 State Farm policy. I know that seems like a long time ago. You know, that was before most of you listening were born, and I get it. Okay, well, the truth is eternal. And I'm just making that comment because, you know, I'm talking about a 1959 policy. He talks about his 1959 State Farm policy. He talks about it in more in depth in his second book, Building a Warehouse of Wealth. Nothing's changed. Not much has changed. The mechanics of a life insurance policy hasn't changed. You know, tax code has changed. You know, there have been lots of changes, but those changes, none of those changes in the financial world negatively affect or diminish the truth of Nelson's work, becoming your own banker and actually controlling the banking function in your life, because that's exactly what the infinite banking concept does. It allows you to control the banking function as it relates to you and your family and your business. And I get it. A bunch of people say, well, I don't get off into the weeds talking about dividends. I don't get off in the weeds talking about these things or those things. I don't care where they go and where they get off, whether it's in the weeds or the water. If you're going to put money, if you are going to pay premium to a life insurance company to own a policy and to enjoy all the benefits of a life insurance policy, and then actually apply the principles and the concepts that Nelson taught, it would behoove you to at least understand, at a bare minimum, the basic mechanics of a life insurance policy. When you get paid a dividend, it is classified in the Internal Revenue Code as a return of premium. Right? And I've said it before, I'll say it again. I don't care how you classify it, IRS. I don't care. Just life insurance company, pay me a dividend. But because of that classification in the Internal Revenue Code, you know, these financial entertainers say, see, they overcharged you. They're just giving you some of your money back. Like, whatever. But, you know, you simply make accusations without any context. And people like, yeah, totally makes sense. Yeah, the guy's making all the commission. The evil insurance company is, you know, just giving you back some of your own money. You know, like, here, peasant, have some crumbs. I mean, oh, my gosh. Oh, and, of course, when you die, the life insurance company keeps your cash value. It's like, all of that really sounds good. It has made, you know, people make decisions that, you know, they might not have otherwise made. And I think surely they could have made better decisions if they had a broader context. Okay. So, because it's a return of premium, according to the Internal Revenue Code, it's not taxable income to me, right? Compare that to a dividend that's issued or paid by a stock. You know, you buy shares of a stock. They send you a dividend. That's income, brother. Yeah, that's taxable. Okay. Where the dividend is not taxable to the owner of a life insurance company. So a life insurance company dividend is not taxable. And, oh, yeah, did I say it adds to the basis? Oh, yes. Yes, you did. Okay, don't jump over any of these points, in my humble opinion. I might not be clearly, succinctly, but what I'm saying, you can listen to it more than one time. It's okay to slow down. I know I talk slow. Slow it down, speed it up, what have you. None of this is complicated. It's so not complicated. Okay, and then if I talk about the power of the dividend, because the dividend is very, very powerful, very powerful, especially when it's paid to the paid-up additions rider. I receive the dividend, or the company declares the dividend. My dividend election was to be paid to the paid-up additions rider. That dividend goes straight to the paid-up additions rider without an expense. There's no cost, right? There's no charge to that dividend being applied to the paid-up additions rider. Yep. What does it do? It goes straight to cash. If the dividend was $1,500, there's a $1,500 increase in cash value, my PUA. All right. And because there's more cash value this year than there was last year, my dividend next year is going to be bigger. So the dividend paid to the PUA, it increases your basis. It's not taxable, and it goes straight dollar for dollar to the cash value, and it buys additional death benefit, paid up additions. That's paid up. The death benefit additions. It's an additional death benefit. It's paid up. No future premium is due. And it earns future dividends. It adds to the exponential compounding curve of a life insurance policy. And it's extremely powerful. It creates early liquidity, right? And you see that in the big wide world, talking about structure. People mutilate policies now to achieve that. I'll talk about that later. All right. Here's what Nelson says. Well, let me say about the charge, because I said it was at no charge, right? There's no cost to that. So if I have a $1,500 dividend declared, I have it paid into the paid up additions rider, $1,500 goes straight to the PUA. There's an exact $1,500 increase in PUA cash value. Compared to, I just wrote, if I have the ability, right, if I wrote the $1,500 check, sent it to the life insurance company and said, hey, apply this to the paid up additions rider. They're going to take that $1,500, subtract a charge, and then the net will be applied to the PUA. All right. So, there is a charge on a PUA premium that exists with every life insurance company. And there is not a charge when the dividend is paid to the paid up additions rider. All right. And we can talk about that for a minute. You know, some of these companies, they charge 14% the first year. Oh, and if you're rated, they'll add 2 points for that. So if I pay $100,000 to the paid-up additions rider in the first year, they're going to take out $14,000. The net's going to go to the PUA. There's some companies that charge, you know, 8 and 10 in the first year. There's then it goes down right after the first year. There are other companies charge 6. You know, so there is a charge to the premium that's paid to the paid up addition rider. And I'm just saying it's another area these companies play games with. But, you know, just to be aware of that, once you see it and understand it, it's not that big a deal, especially when it causes my future dividends to go up, right? It's very difficult to see. You're not going to look at a life insurance illustration. You'll read it in the disclosures. It'll be in the contract what the charge is to the paid up additions. But if I pay $1,000 to the PUA this year, I'm going to see an increased dividend compared to if I didn't pay that $1,000 to the PUA, right? So it's very hard to see where the charge is. I'm telling you, it's there. Okay. Nelson has something to say about that as well. Becoming Your Own Banker, page 23. In my quote, if the owner uses the dividend to purchase paid up insurance, parentheses, no cost for acquisition, comma, sales commissions, etc., comma, the result is an ever-increasing tax-deferred accumulation of cash values that support an ever-increasing death benefit. The man gets it done in half a paragraph. Not even half. Gets it done in a few lines. Very, very simple. And, yep, there's an increased death benefit, right? Paid up addition, there's an increase in death benefit. And oftentimes, and I'm going to take another diversion here, that, you know, we want to take the death benefit out of the whole component of building policies and becoming our own banker and practicing this idea of controlling the banking function. When you cannot separate the death benefit, life insurance does not come any other way. Right. It's very important. Can't really get into it here. I've gotten into it other places. There's more places and modules at bankingwithlife.com. I think there's a fabulous source of information, educational there that you should consider taking advantage of. Okay. I know I've discussed the PUA. I've already talked about that part one, part two. Yeah. Okay. Nelson continues on the same page. By the way, these dividends can get pretty significant over a long period of time. I bought a policy from a major insurance company in 1959, and the annual dividend is over 10 times the annual premium now. This book was published in 2000. Right, he bought his policy in 1959. I know we're talking about a long time period. I know it's hard. I know it's a challenge. But I also know that long-term thinking and actions will serve you better and very well over a lifetime. But they'll serve you better than short-term thinking when it comes to the infinite banking concept. So, in my opinion, what you would want would be to own a policy with a well-run mutual company that does not play games with their dividends. They don't subsidize their dividends. So the direct answer to your question is companies move up and down in dividends regularly. As interest rates go up in the economy, the interest returns that they enjoy, the life insurance company would enjoy through their investment portfolio, which is very limited, would also rise. Therefore, if they're well run and they're profitable, then the dividend is your share of their financial experience. So if they're well run and profitable, they're going to pay a stable dividend. And that's what you want. Don't fall into the game of this company pays a 6% dividend. This company pays 5.1. This company pays 5.2. Look at the company and look at a company beyond the dividend. That is not the only factor that you would consider in purchasing a policy with a particular company. Just like direct and non-direct. Well, if you're going to practice banking, quote unquote, and you're going to have cash values collateralized, you want a full dividend paid by a non-direct recognition company, not an adjusted dividend that would be paid for a non or that would be paid by a direct recognition company. So non-direct company doesn't consider the outstanding loan or an outstanding loan balance to calculate their dividend. A direct recognition company directly recognizes an outstanding loan and therefore adjusts the dividend. Those things, or things like that in totality, don't make a decision on a company based on one factor, especially the dividend. They're a good company, well-run and profitable. They're going to pay a good dividend, and they're going to pay it consistently. You hear this quite often, that a direct recognition company is the most honest way to handle an outstanding loan, implying that a non-direct recognition company is dishonest. That's all made up out of whole cloth, out of thin air. It's almost ludicrous. Completely manufactured, that statement, or statements like that are completely manufactured out of thin air. Non-direct recognition companies penalize the policyholders that don't take a loan. That's the exact opposite, right? A non-direct recognition company pays the declared dividend, whether there's an outstanding loan or not, without an adjustment. The implication is there's an adjustment down in the dividend, and all the policyholders that are not borrowing money are penalized. That's, I don't know how you can take the facts. They're prima facie, they're factual on their face, and twist that around to make the opposite occur. But we live in an upside down world today. I get it. So you also hear a lot of like, oh, well, a direct recognition company will give you a dividend boost. Another statement made up purely out of whole cloth, thin air. Can the adjustment be positive? Yes, it can be positive. You hear people talking about it all the time. You've never seen it. I've never seen it. It could occur in high inflationary environments. All right. Okay. That's possible. Like I said, my dog, it's possible that I could teach my dog algebra, but I haven't seen it, and it's likely not going to happen. So I hear statements all the time or regularly, well, when the interest rates are high, you're rewarded with an increased dividend. Okay, so they didn't use the word boost, but that's if they're going to pay you. The life insurance company is going to pay you to take a loan. Think that one through. Here's the cost. Here's the loan interest rate. And if you use that loan interest rate, I'm going to give you more money. I'm going to give you an increased dividend for borrowing the money. It's like, yep, not true. Not going to happen. You know, the boost. Many times the life insurance company will reward you, the policyholder that borrows money, with a boost to offset the high loan interest rates. It's like, no, 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 no. Implying that you're going to receive a lower dividend, because if you're in a with a non-direct company, you're going to receive a lower dividend because other people borrowed money and the life insurance company has to use funds from the general account. No kidding. So a little bit of truth, the loans come from the general funds, a general account of the life insurance company. You know, they've got to put that capital to work anyway. So if they can go earn 6, 10, 8, 9, 10% in the open market to meet the future obligations, which is what a life insurance contract is to the life insurance company, future obligations. If they're only going to charge you 6, 6.5% on the loan interest rate, and they could have been making 10, yeah, they might do some behavioral modification for you to be disincentivized for taking a loan. Oh, like a reduced dividend. Yeah. And then with a direct recognition company, with a non-direct recognition company, the only thing they can do is raise the loan interest rate. Right. But that doesn't happen willy-nilly. I've talked about that many times and talk about it in more detail in the Learning Center.
Thank you for joining us on the Banking with Life podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to like and subscribe and click on that little notification bell. Otherwise, join us on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher for weekly content.